Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome. You are listening to Interchange on WFHB. I'm Allison Bektesh, and tonight I'm hosting a discussion exploring the potential impact of paid parking downtown on the economics and social services provided in downtown Bloomington. I have a packed room here in the studio with me, all crowded around the table today. With me here in the studio are local business owners Jason Nicky and Jim Bradley, City Council Member Susan Sandberg, and Reverend Helen Hempfling, who's the pastor of Bloomington's First Christian Church. The City Council delayed their original vote on this issue and has had some community conversations throughout the week since the original vote. The vote is coming up on the proposal to have paid parking downtown next Wednesday on the 20th, and I thought we'd have our own community conversation right here in the WFHB studios this evening. I'm so happy that all of you have been able to make it down. Thank you so much for coming into WFHB today.
Thank you. Thanks, Allison.
Thank you.
So an hour goes by really fast, and we'll try and get as much into that as possible. I do want to let our listeners know for some of the background conversations, we have been covering this issue very strongly since it came up all year long, and we do have links to all of our former conversations and coverage through our news programming on WFHB.org, and along with the podcast of tonight's episode, once it goes out, we will link to our episode, Interchange episode from January 8th of this year, which featured Mayor Mark Ruzan and Bloomington Director of Public Works Susie Johnson speaking in support of the parking proposal. We'll also have some links to a frequently asked questions document that is posted online and some of the other documents involved with this proposal. So without going into too much background on the proposal, I will summarize by saying that next week they'll be voting, the City Council will be voting its Ordinance 13-03. It would expand the use of parking meters in downtown Bloomington, which is about a 20-block area in an L shape, and we can get into the specifics of who would be affected, but parameters of Rogers to Indiana running north-south and 11th to 3rd Street running east-west there at a rate of $1 per hour. So that's the proposal. And before we go further into the details of what the proposal is, I'm hoping that each of you will explain to me how people currently use, for lack of a better word, your space that you have downtown. So perhaps let's start with local business owners. If you could introduce yourself and your business and give us an idea of who your patrons are, who's coming into the store currently.
I'm Jim Bradley with Ochild Boutique. My wife and I are owners of the store, and we've been in business since 2007. We currently have a parking pass for ourselves, but all our staff and all our visitors basically park on the street. We don't get any complaints about them having trouble finding a parking place. And we get a wide range of people. We get, you know, grandparents, we get visitors, people who are staying downtown in the hotels. We get a lot of families coming downtown that are, and a lot of people come in, like they'll come in for the market on Saturday mornings and they'll walk downtown and then they'll come into our store and things like that. So we really had an intention of locating downtown because we wanted to be part of the community, and we really have that vibe right now. We, you know, that's what we get, is a lot of people in the community that come downtown, want to spend time downtown walking and enjoying it, and they come into our shop, and so we really, really like that.
Wonderful. Jason, I would think the same for you as far as patrons go. It doesn't mean that every time someone walks into the store, they're buying something, but since they're downtown, they're going to stop into the store, or in your case, maybe thumb through the records at Landlocked.
Yeah, I'd say it's more often than not they don't buy something when they, I mean, they might do a little reconnaissance mission first. We have lots of customers that come in two or three times a week, and they might buy something one of those times, and the other times they're making a list either mentally or sometimes actually making a list and just scoping us out and just seeing what's new. So that time is very important to those customers, and therefore important to me and my business.
I'm curious if you have any way of finding out, or if people have been discussing this since the proposals come up. Are people driving downtown when they come to see you? Do you know where they're parking, how long they're spending downtown?
Well, I've started to ask people more and more since this debate has come up. And yeah, a lot of them do drive. A lot of them all work downtown. So they're driving to work and they're getting lunch maybe and they're coming in. It's, I don't think it's, you know, there's a good mix, I think. We have a lot of people who do bike or walk, and people who live downtown too. I mean, it's a broad reach of people, but, you know, definitely a significant amount of them drive to my store. We get a lot of out-of-town people who live in Bedford and Martinsville and Columbus, Terre Haute. We have people who come in on a weekly basis from those cities, Indianapolis. So obviously those people drive too.
Yeah, most people drive to our store too. I think most people who are shopping, they need to have a car in order to be able to put the stuff they buy in it to take it home. I mean, there's not too many people who can ride a bike to a grocery store and do the grocery shopping or do anything like that. But you know, they'll come downtown, they'll park. Now they may walk downtown just to enjoy it, but they'll normally drive downtown. That's where they start.
Anyone who comes into my store to sell a bunch of records because they're broke or driving downtown. They're not biking with 200 pounds of vinyl on their heads. So, I mean, that's I just thought about that right now, is how many times people come in with a crate of records. And, I mean, that's our stock. That's how we stay in business, is selling used records and CDs. But, yeah, those people do not walk or bike in, you know, and they're often selling them because they need money. I mean, you know, people, I've done it too, you know, I need to pay a bill. So I go sell some records that I don't really want. It's this sort of commodity that among people like me.
And can you, just a minute briefly alluded to, but explain a little bit more, what your business is, locally owned, when and how it was established?
I sort of skipped that. We opened in 06, so just about a year before you. We're a record store, records and CDs and related, sort of things like turntables and whatnot. We were located on the periphery of downtown for, about 2 years, and we've been, pretty much right on the square. For the past like 5 or so, I guess.
As both of you have turned kind of your faces towards the square, has that changed business at all, being on that walking circle?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when we first opened, we were in the back side of Fountain Square Mall, and now we're right on the street. And I mean, our business increased 20% just in that one move. And so we saw a significant jump. And now, I mean, a lot of people can walk by the mall and they won't even know what's inside it. If they don't go inside, they won't know what's in there. And so by being on the street, it's really important.
And you also, Jason, alluded a little bit that actually sometimes not only are people not coming to spend money, they're coming in hopes of getting some money. Later on the show, we are going to talk a lot about the difference between the low-income people shopping downtown and other people who could afford as much paid parking as they ever want. Can you give me a little bit like the price points or how much money people are spending when they do come into your store?
I honestly don't have like an average, because it really just, sometimes people come in and they buy a dollar record, and that's, you know, something that's, they're happy to find some cheap thing in our dollar bin. And then, you know, other times people were coming here from out of town and they blow a few hundred bucks.
So I'm not, without opening your kind of accountant books, I guess I'm asking to get a feel for what percentage this dollar per hour would be of their total cost of coming downtown and purchasing something.
Well, I mean, it adds up. I mean, we have lots of little sales that are under $10. And if someone's, you know, putting a dollar on top of that, I have to think that would affect how often they come in. I mean, we're a cheap form of entertainment, my store, and it's cheaper than going to a movie or whatever. So I think it's sometimes just a little treat to themselves to pop in and get some stupid record that they remember from their childhood or something. And, you know, if they have to pay whatever on top of that, I just feel like many, many people will just say, well, I'll do something else. I'll, you know, not. I'll buy something online. I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, we have a lot of, we have a wide range of price points. I mean, it can go down to a $6 knitted finger puppet. we have little toys and little odds and ends, things that, you know, you'd buy for stocking stuffers or something like that for a child, or if you're on a trip, you'd buy it, take it home to them, and things like that. And then we have clothes, and we have a wide range of clothes, some good, really good day wear that you can get at really good prices. We run sales, you know, on pretty consistent, you know, buy two, get a, you know, 50% off or 100, or get a third one free or something like that. We have clearance racks and stuff like that. So we have a wide range, but then we also have some higher priced items, you know, $100 dream coats, you know, for the grandmother, for the first grandchild or something like that. So we try to be open to a wide range of clients and try to provide for everyone.
Really. I will say that I have people who will haggle with me over paying sales tax on a $3 record. So, you know, 21 cents. So I know it's in their mind. Like I have that conversation almost every, you know, couple of days at least, that someone's like, oh, will you just take three for this? And it's like, oh, it's just 21, you know, and it seems ridiculous, but for some that's, you know, I've definitely been in situations where that seems like a lot of money, you know, it's, you know, it adds up. So, I mean, I think it's easy to forget that when you have a good job, how much that can matter.
Continuing on with our introductions around the table, Helen, first, can you tell us about First Christian Church, where it's located, and a little bit of its history? And I'm also curious what activities are held within the church, and during what hours, who is involved in those different activities, both who makes up your congregation and who comes in and out of the church that has nothing to do with the congregation and they use other services there.
Thank you. Well, First Christian Church is on the corner of Kirkwood and Washington, and it's been there since 1826. So it's one of the long-standing parts of this community, along with the other congregations downtown, which have been there since really the beginning of Bloomington, that we've really offered a real stable anchor in the community. We've had multiple opportunities to decide whether or not we want to move to the suburbs, which some congregations do choose that, but we've chosen to remain downtown because we feel like we have something to offer to the downtown. We have stability. We have beauty. We have a place of welcome and respite. We think we add to the vibrancy of this community. We are not, people who come to First Christian Church do not come to eat or to shop or to spend money on themselves, but they come to serve. They're very other-oriented. And they also, other groups come to receive what we have to offer in the form of hospitality and help and even healing. So we've got several different groups of people who come. During the day, it's mostly folks who come who are members of the congregation, who are really want to be involved in the deeper ongoings of what happens in the church. And it's not just Sunday morning. We have people who volunteer to answer the phones every single day. We have people who come to do our communications with the newsletters. We have people who come keep the books. The church is run by volunteers, and so people come during the day to set up and do a variety of things. Some come for a long period of times. Most come, like the volunteers, stay for hours to answer the phones, and some come just to drop off some canned goods that need to go to Opportunity at Macklemore Opportunity House. So during the day, there's a lot of people kind of stopping in for any period of time, just to say hello or do a little bit of work for their extended their church community, faith community. In the evenings, we also have a mixed group. Every night, well, actually, I brought a list with me because I can't keep track. Every night, there are multiple groups that use the church, both from the community at large and the church community. Weekly, we have our choir meetings. We have book groups. We have study groups. We have groups that come to talk about the life of the church, the business part of the church. So church groups use it regularly. And then we also have on a weekly basis many community groups. We host six 12-step groups. We all provide space for nonprofit groups like Monroe County Cares, who meets there, Habitat for Humanity. We host a breakfast every Sunday morning for anybody who does not have a place to eat or eat in a morning. Thursday and Friday nights, we host serve as a host site for Interfaith Winter Shelter, and one Saturday a month too. And so volunteers come for that, as well as people who come and receive what we have to offer. We have watercolor groups. We host concerts and recitals. We see ourselves as offering space to a community that really adds to the vibrancy of what we do. Space and healing hospitality is kind of what we do. And happy to do it.
Thank you, Helen. And Susan, I'm glad that you're here. You wear many hats around town, so you're able to speak about your role in City Council and the comments you've received during this open period since the parking proposal was delayed, the vote on that. You also are involved in the social issues around town, a member of the Circles Initiative Guiding Coalition. So I'm wondering what you have heard since the delay from both your constituents and the people you come into contact through some of the social services you're involved in.
Certainly. I've heard from a number of people, including Helen, who sent us a letter of appeal, again, talking about the many things she does. I actually have been a part of the Bloomington Pops chorus. We have done rehearsals at First Christian Church, and so I can certainly speak to the vibrancy of things that are occurring even outside of the church family. And when she talks about the 12-step programs and the Habitat for Humanity, and the winter shelter, I mean, these are all things that weigh very heavily on the minds of all of us on the City Council. I'm certainly not alone in my concern for low-income constituents and what any kind of fee increase or tax increase can potentially do to them. And I want to begin by saying I do have the deepest of respect for Mayor Cruzan and Susie Johnson. Mayor Cruzan has been a strong and fiscally prudent manager of the city, as well as Susie Johnson. Again, they work hard, they crunch the numbers, and I don't doubt that this proposal that's coming forward to us is shaped on many merits in terms of economic realities and in terms of the high cost of managing those parking garages and the fact that they are not being well utilized as perhaps they should. I want to begin the conversation with that, and also that many of the people that I talk to who also have reservations about this, as I do, I'm going to be honest, I've had reservations about this proposal to put meters back in the downtown since really the study that came out in 2007. That Walker study was the genesis for this conversation. And at that point in time, that was before the Great Recession. And so I think we're kind of missing an opportunity when we refer back to that Walker study and not keep into consideration what has happened in the interim. And that's both for the business community as well as people who populate the downtown. And as Helen said, there's more than just commerce going on in the downtown. There's a lot of vibrancy that comes from the nonprofit work, the volunteer work. I'm talking about, in addition to social services, the arts. I'm also very actively engaged with the Bloomington Arts Commission and the BEAD, the Bloomington Entertainment Arts District. There are a lot of things that I see that could have some potential hit, could take some real hits from this increase. And for some people, it won't be a drop in a bucket. A dollar an hour for some people will be chump change. That won't change any behaviors at all. For some other people on the fiscal fringe, and these are the people that I'm in contact with through my work with South Central Community Action Program and their Circles Initiative, and the people I work with through Centerstone's Project Hope, Project Care, people in the recovery from addictions community, this will have an impact. We're looking at civic engagement, artistic engagement, people who need to go to the courthouse, that they're not going down to shop and spend their expendable dollars. They're there because they have to be to go to court. We're talking about the Futures Clinic that's moving to the Department of Health Building on 7th and is it Walnut College? And so these are the people that I listen to and I interact with, and I do not take their fiscal situation lightly, nor am I cavalier about, oh, they'll adjust. And I've heard that. Oh, this is going to be a bad thing for some people. They're going to be negative about it. They're going to naysay about it. But eventually, they'll get used to paying the dollar an hour. Fine. Some people will. This is not going to kill the downtown. I have said this all along. I'm not a doom and gloomer. And, you know, like the smoking ordinance that many people remember going through, the restaurants and the bar owners said, this is going to kill our business. It's going to kill it, kill it, kill it. And it didn't. It actually, you know, people like myself who don't smoke actually find it fun now to go out more often in the evenings. And so it didn't kill the downtown. But there are some people who this will have an impact on. And those people are the ones that I feel I'm the voice for. I do understand where they're coming from. And I think you are going to see some changes in behavior that may not be necessarily good, things that we may regret as a result of rolling this out. So I think it's come up rather quickly. I mean, when you think 2007 to now, you think, oh, hey, you people have plenty of time to get used to this. Not really. And so this delay is doing several things. It's causing people to talk to each other more often, try to get an understanding of why this is coming forward, but I'm not sure everyone has been consulted.
Thank you all so much. You spoke about the original genesis of the Walker study and some of the other reasons why this proposal has even come up. That is what we will begin speaking about right after this break. You are listening to Interchange on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Panache Dance, a locally owned independent dance studio featuring ballroom, Latin, and nightclub dance, as well as dance fitness classes such as Zumba, Bollywood, hip-hop, and more, featuring special offers on your first dance fitness class or your first private lesson. Panache is available by phone at 812-822-0050. With a full schedule of classes online at www.panachedance.com. Support for WFHB also comes from Grazzi Italian Eatery, locally owned and operated for over 10 years. Every Friday and Saturday night features live piano music from local musician Dave Schwant and specials on local pints. Grazzi Italian Eatery, located downtown on the square in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana.
Welcome back to Interchange. My name is Allison Bechtesh. I'm your host this evening. I have a full house here in the WFHB studios with me, speaking about some of the impacts a paid parking proposal, should it go through, would have on our downtown here in Bloomington. Jason Nicky is here in the studio. He is an owner of Landlock Music. Reverend Helen Hempfling, pastor of the First Christian Church down on Kirkwood, is here. Jim Bradley, co-owner of Oh Child in the Fountain Square Mall right here in downtown Bloomington, and Susan Sandberg, City Council at Large member. Thank you again all for being here. The time has already flown by, and we do want to get to a lot of topics regarding the paid parking. And it, as you just said, it's nice that they decided to delay the vote, that a lot of conversations are happening, and I'm happy here on Interchange to be able to continue that conversation and have all these different demographics to voice their opinion. I'm interested, before we get too much further, your feelings on some of the reasons why this proposal has come out. As you cited earlier, in 2007, Walker Parking Consultants, actually based in Indianapolis, but they consult nationwide, did come and look over the city. And I actually have that study here. At the time, it really was based on the garages, the parking garages, which were underutilized. They were costing the city. Neither one of those things have changed since. But there was actually three main recommendations at the conclusion. And Susan, maybe you can fill me in a little more. But of those three, one was paid parking. And I don't know if the other two have been looked into. Grants, federal grants available for transportation and downtown urbanization, and also kind of redesignations of downtown areas were two other recommendations from the Walker study. The third was that we make this enterprise zone, that we start collecting finances just from the people who are using the service, and then that money goes back into the parking garages. So that's what I was hearing a lot during my early reporting about this proposal. You know, it's free to park on the street. You have to pay to park in the garage. So that was just an imbalance. And then when we had our discussion on interchange earlier this year, the points that were brought up a lot were that Susie Johnson and Mayor Kruzan were both just looking for more turnover downtown. They said that we just want to get those parking spaces free and open, that we're reaching maximum capacity on the street, and that being about 80% or more spaces filled on any given block. So I'm curious about the transition, first of all, and the kind of new reason that I'm hearing most often, that we're just at maximum capacity. In the people that you interact with throughout the day, are they saying that it's too hard to find parking on the street in Bloomington?
Well, it's a matter of supply and demand, actually, and that's very clear when you have free on-street parking. Now, it's not totally free because you do have to move your car every 2 hours to address that turnover piece. But then after hours, when there's no longer the enforcement piece, there can be the long-term parking. And so any of those two problems do have eccentric issues that have to be dealt with. The other issue that's come up recently in our discussions is certainly the growth factor. I think anyone can look at our downtown and see what's popping up in terms of the new apartment complexes. There's going to be a new hotel coming online. And one of the questions that was asked early on in this discussion of the mayor was to provide a little bit of an overview of what his projection is over the next 3 years. And I think some of the store owners may speak to this. A lot of people don't feel the pinch right now, but in 3 years, once all these new residential entities start coming online, we will start seeing that pinch. And I think that's perhaps the behavior we're looking to change at this point. And there are finite places to park downtown. A lot of discussion early on when the Walker study came out was about walkability, bikeability. Let's reduce the number of cars. Let's encourage people to live downtown so they can just walk everywhere. And I, you know, early on in that discussion, I was uncomfortable with the fact that if you want to have people coming from out of town, they're going to be driving their vehicles. They're not going to be walking from Indianapolis. If you want people from other parts of your city to enjoy your downtown who are not on an easy access to a bus line, they're more often than not going to be driving. As has been already mentioned, you know, to shop, you need to have a vehicle. If you're transporting children, if you're transporting elderly, if you're transporting someone with a disability, cars are going to be a part of the downtown hustle and bustle, and they do need to be accommodated. But then if the garages are for a permit fee and the parking on the street is free, guess what people are going to choose? So you did have an issue with how do we drive more people into those garages so more of our available parking spaces are utilized. And I think much of the discussion first began about that.
I will interject, but I do want to hear from the other three of you if this is a problem, the availability. If the parking garages are not being used, isn't that a sign that there is enough downtown street parking?
I think at this point in time, people could say yes. And then people have asked me, why don't we do a better job of making those garages more understandable? I think there's an issue with signage. People don't get them, so they don't venture into them. They've not really been educated about what the price points are and when it's free. A lot of people, a lot of women have certainly approached me saying they don't feel safe in there. It's dark and it's kind of, there's really not a presence in there when you're there late at night. There are a lot of barriers that keep people from feeling comfortable going into those garages that I think people would have wished could have been addressed before this new measure of all right, now you're going to have to pay to park on the street. You might then have more of an incentive to try to get one of those spots in the garages. But then there are reasons why people might not want to do that.
Won't the increase in population downtown naturally force people into those garages? Like,
certainly.
Even if you just left, I mean, so why is that certainly not being discussed at all?
That
will naturally sort of happen. Or lowering the prices. I mean, if I have a product in my store that's not selling, I mark it down, or I redisplay it, or I somehow relaunch it and recontextualize it, or something. I do something to it. I don't mark something else, some other category up to make up for the loss in one category.
Right. And again, you're speaking to someone who is not a fan of paid meters coming back into the downtown.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're asking me to explain that because to me it is a matter of supply and demand. And as those parking spaces become harder and harder to find, that will certainly drive people into the garages.
Am I wrong? But under the new proposal, under the meter proposal, there's no time limits, right?
Those are the details that are yet to be worked out. I think there's a lot of myths floating around out there as to what this is and what it isn't.
Yeah,
and to be
I'm
honest,
unclear about it, whether
on
there's
March
gonna be a time
the 20th, there could very well be some amendments coming forward that might change a few things about the current proposal. We've yet to see what's going to be coming forward next Wednesday.
So what's to keep someone from just parking all day, every day, if they want to spend the money and do it?
I definitely want to speak about the cost ratio and maybe the imbalance between if you have the funds to do that.
I think there's
a lot
of wealthy students in town that wouldn't mind just parking and paying
$1
an hour.
Have people told you that they can't find parking when they come
Rarely.
Into your store?
Not as much as I thought. When I moved downtown, I thought I would hear it every day, all day, but I rarely hear it. And it's usually when someone has to carry in a huge crate of records and they're complaining about walking a block to carry, you know, they're carrying heavy weight or something. It's not because they can't really.
And have you heard feedback, either one of you?
During the day, there's not a problem. People, they may not have to find a spot right before they want it to, but it doesn't take long to find a spot. In the evening, it's sometimes people do have to drive around a little bit longer, but and maybe they're a few minutes late for a meeting or for a choir practice or for one of the things that we have going on at the congregation in the church. But we've never had people say, "I'm sorry, I couldn't find a parking place, therefore I'm not going."
Yeah, we've never had anybody complain during the day, but we notice that it does fill up really quickly once the enforcement time, you know, you can come downtown at 3:30 and park all night because you've got the 2 hours till 5 and then you can go all night.
There are certainly times when it's bad. I mean, it's admittedly there's...
Kind of corresponds when the garage is empty out too, because I mean, we park in the 4th Street garage or garage art, and... you know, it's pretty full. I mean, we like the convenience of parking on the third floor and coming across the bridge to the mall. It's real convenient for us. We know that there's a lot of people that work in the offices that work in the building that park there. So it seems to be fairly well occupied during the day. And then at night, I think there is an issue with signage. I don't think people realize when the gates are up, they can go all the way to the third floor and park. It's pretty much empty at night. You know, I think just enforcing the two-hour ban up until the two-hour limit up until 10 o'clock would force people who are working in the restaurants and stuff like that to go into the garage. And if the garage was available and open free earlier, maybe at 5 as opposed to 6, they could get in there before they have to be on shift or something. So I think there's... And I guess that's the one thing that has kind of bothered me about this whole discussion. There wasn't really a whole lot of discussion about other alternatives to address the parking issue. It just came out, it's going to be meters. That's the solution. And to me, that's like saying, okay, well, it's really about the money because there are other options we could do for the parking. So it's really more about the money. And in fact, the group that we've been in of downtown merchants, we've been trying to offer the city alternatives for funding as opposed to the parking meters. But we haven't gotten too far on that.
Well, I do want to discuss that further later in the show and address later in the show also what Susan mentioned about some amendments coming in next week. And I do expect that as well. I will say that in the discussion on January 8th of this year, Mayor Kuzan did say they will get rid of the two-hour time limit. And then under the current proposal, I do have the ordinance as it was written when it was on its first reading here as well. That would mean you could just pay $1 per hour, however long you want to stay there. And I do want to talk about the affordability of that. Or, you know, for some people, that's completely affordable. For others, that's such a huge percentage of what they would have spent during the day or during a week. But to get to something that, Susan, you spoke about right before our break, even if it was completely affordable, I do want to talk just about how a timeline-based parking system changes the attitude of changes how people use downtown if you're on the clock, like you said. So forgetting affordability just for a moment, I want to have a discussion. If you know how much your time you have and it's just a certain amount of time, will you still browse? If you don't know exactly what you want, will you even stop through downtown and park and pay and go in? If you don't have a specific thing that's on your grocery list, will you stop?
Will you go to the library and hang out with your children in the playroom? I mean, stuff like that, yeah.
You know, with the paid parking downtown, will you start using garages, which will be half the price? And if that happens, will you start frequenting the businesses and services around the garages instead? You know, have you thought about how this will maybe change people's attitudes and use of downtown?
We've had people who not only members of our congregation, but members who use our building, who have said they'll have to think long and hard on how often they'll be taking advantage of what the church has to offer, because there are other options. There are other places they can go where they wouldn't have to walk a couple blocks from the parking lot to the church. There are other places where they could go to worship, where they could get the same kind of community. What concerns me, I suppose, is I've been in communities with these grand, beautiful architectural gems that are really falling apart, and churches falling apart because there hasn't been the community there to support it. And I don't want to see that happen. We have too many beautiful buildings, church buildings in this downtown that really need to continue to add that beauty of and stability to the community. And we have heard from some of our folks that they will have to think long and hard about how much they want to engage in their community of faith life beyond Sunday mornings.
Well, and Helen, what you're talking about is a potential exodus. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is going to happen overnight. I think the meters will go in, people will adapt, they'll adjust, but I think some stresses and strains may remain. I'm already hearing from the faith community about volunteer fatigue in managing those shelter services that has been such a godsend for the community in addressing one of our serious needs for dealing with people who are facing homelessness, who are struggling with addiction issues. I mean, there are any number of people who really do need the services that are provided by First Christian Church, First United Methodist, Trinity, First Presbyterian. I certainly was involved with a recovery group, a support group that was in the First Presbyterian Church, and I do know how many 12-step programs happened there. And so these are not people who are coming downtown to shop and buy and consume. These are people coming for different reasons. I do see that if it becomes too difficult, there are too many barriers thrown out for people of low or no means, that you're going to see an exodus. You're going to see things moving out of the downtown core. Now, again, will this kill the downtown? No. But what's it going to leave? I fear that with all the attention to the apartment complexes and student residential developments, we're going to see a downtown that caters to student life. We're going to see a downtown that perhaps will cater to tourism, which might not be bad for the businesses at some point once those hotels come online and people want to go to interesting places in the square beside a bar. You might see some infusion in that respect. But the populations that concern me the most are volunteers. are people who are downtown not to buy, not to consume, but to work on behalf of other citizens. That sense of camaraderie, that sense of a gathering spot. The arts are so important to me for that regard, in terms of all the great theater, all the great gallery spaces we have. And these are attractors. To me, these are the things that make our downtown so cool and so vibrant. And not, you know, no offense to students. I work for the School of Public and Environmental Affairs. I work with students. I love students. But I, as an adult, do not necessarily want to see a downtown that caters strictly to bars, nightclubs, student life, at the expense of older people who are there to conduct business that goes beyond their own, you know, need of the day.
Exactly. It is such a community. Downtown, really, I think every place in this town attracts the most diverse population in Bloomington, from the people who've been here all their lives, from people who are just driving in just to see it. And I would hate to see that disappear.
That's what I love about this city. I love that about this city. And when we start benchmarking against other cities, and I've heard this come up time and again with this Walker study and this proposal, is, well, we're the only Big Ten college or one of two who don't have meters, and let's look at other cities and see what they're doing. And I always say to them, do they have an arts district? Mm-hmm. You know, do they have this vibrant nonprofit people giving back to other people that's happening in our downtown, in addition to the really great places to eat and shop? I mean, it has it all. My concern always is balance. Are we going to be tipping a scale toward a point where we're not going to like our downtown anymore? And again, I said it before, I'll say it again. The downtown will be fine. It'll go on. Life will go on. After the smoking ordinance, life did go on. But it will be significantly different for some people. Right. And many of these people are the people who I'm involved with the Circles Initiative, who are people struggling to get out of poverty.
All right, I am getting the signal that we have to go to break. And so let's come back from break and talk about, of course, a huge fee would change everything, but how big of a fee is just a dollar an hour? That's coming up next on Interchange. All right, back on Interchange. I'm your host, Allison Bechtesh. Some murmuring going on. I have a big crowd joining us here in the studio today. I'm very happy to have Susan Sandberg, City Council at Large, Jim Bradley, co-owner of O Child in the Fountain Square Mall, Reverend Helen Hempfling, who is the pastor of the First Christian Church on Kirkwood Avenue, and Jason Nicky from Landlocked Music. We're all discussing the some potential ramifications of paid parking downtown. Throughout that break, we were talking about the big influx of students living downtown, or just residences downtown in general, but we all know that that is not for families or low-income residences. That's not what's being built. And I do really, really want to get to, in our last segment here, the impact it will have on low-income families and people who are coming through the downtown. If one of you could speak to this, one of the things I hear the most often is like, oh, if you're poor, you don't have a car anyway. And I think that, can you please give me your response to that comment, Helen?
That's not necessarily true. If you're poor, you might have a car that works some of the time and doesn't work some of the time, but you still have a car if you're still trying to figure out how to get places. However, if you think about, especially the folks that we serve in the evening, who are varying degrees of poverty, many of them are trying to struggle to get out of poverty, and they may be working on addictions, and you may be attending five meetings a week or more, and that adds up money wise. A dollar may not be something for at a one time shot if you're a tourist and going to come downtown once a week, once a month, whatever. But if you're coming down there to one time a day or two or three times a day, and that's your limited income, that really does add up, and it will make you think once or twice, oh, maybe I can skip something tonight, or I can get away with it. And then it does start adding up. Those of us who are involved in the recovery area do know that these programs at these congregations, not only First Christian, but all the downtown churches, offer multiple 12-step programs, which really do add to the health of this community in ways that I'm not sure people realize.
Well, and once again, there's a stigma about the poor. I brought my book, Nickel and Dime. This is my Bible. I love Barbara Ehrenreich's groundbreaking book about how expensive it is to be poor. And that sounds crazy, but I mean, when we had some of these early conversations about, well, the downtown is really geared for the well-heeled. And if they've got a dollar to spend on a latte, they can surely put a dollar in the parking meter. Some of the people I work with are not downtown to buy lattes. Heck, I don't even buy lattes. But they are there to do other things, and a dollar for them is significant. And the whole issue of transportation when you are poor is huge. Again, Helen, that was brilliant. I mean, they are dealing with unreliable cars that don't always get them from place to place, but it's all they have. And many people having to use that one unreliable car to get their business met. And that means visiting loved ones in jail. I've certainly seen that. The number of people that are there to support their family members in the downtown Monroe County Correction Center. Again, people going to court, people going to the Futures Clinic. There are people who are really struggling on the bottom rungs of our socioeconomic ladder who are not downtown to spend frivolously. And I don't expect in our prime real estate, which face it, your downtown, that's primo hot stuff. You're not going to see housing for low-income folks built there. What I want to see, though, when we talk about the balance of residential units is balance of housing that will attract older people, the retirement community perhaps, and so that we don't have an influx of only student-oriented housing that will drive the economy and drive all the other activities that go on in the downtown. Just balance is all I seek. And when we know there are people of low income and no means who are utilizing services in the downtown, let's be respectful. What are they going to do now?
I mean, I would say that based on the layout of the city, it'd be harder to, it's easier to not have a car if you're rich, because the housing that is walkable and bikeable is less affordable. I can give you examples of people I've interviewed where, of course, they have a car because they're poor. That's actually where they live, is in their car. And so this dollar an hour rate could mean completely the difference between your unemployment check that week or not, and especially because it's unlimited. I do have a question to ask about this dollar a minute rate that we're talking about. Susan, do you have a feel if there's a minimum amount you can put in? Because many things you do downtown actually don't take an hour, especially if you're stopping by to volunteer, you know, pick up the books, leave them back at the library. Can you pay 10 cents and run in somewhere?
Well, again, these are the details that will be worked out later with the purchase of the equipment. There's all kinds of vendors that the city is looking at in terms of what type of meter and how it can be programmed. My understanding at this point, and of course this discussion will happen later, that you can program it and still put in quarters. And by the way, it's a dollar an hour, not a dollar a minute. I almost had a heart attack when you said that.
Oh.
Because a dollar an hour is going to put some people over the edge. A dollar a minute would really be serious. But you can put in as many quarters as will buy you, I suppose, what you needed. That could be an option. You can also use credit cards to do it. You can even use smartphones. But here's the other issue, too. And some of my friends who are much more technologically advanced than I am say, oh, it's easy. You're in a restaurant. If you need to re-up your meter, just use your smartphone. I don't have a smartphone, and I know a lot of people in the low-income community don't have one either. And so it's not going to be as simple and easy for people who don't even really have credit cards to flash around. Mm.
I know there's a proposal to make the first, or a proposed amendment maybe to make the first 15 minutes of the first half an hour free or something like that.
I'm not sure if that will fly, but there's certainly a lot of chatter about what.
Well, that's
if,
my point, though, is just there's so much range to what can happen. That's sort of what scares me, is the massive, like, the uncertainty of it. It could be something really extreme, or it could be not knowing and freaks me out.
Being the devil's advocate and knowing the administration like I do, they want to do the best job possible to make this as smooth of a transition, which will harm as few people as possible. No one intends for this to be draconian or you know, a terrible thing. They mean well. The economy does require that we bring in adequate revenue in order to provide city services, and that means streets, sidewalks, police, fire. And I respect the fact that if this is an economic issue, that the revenue is absolutely required in order to keep the wheels on the bus turning, then this is a tough decision that we're all grappling with. I'm just here today in particular, though, to speak on behalf of people who are not going to adapt to this. They are not going to adjust to this change as readily as people with disposable income.
Let's talk about the affordability, not just for the people coming downtown, but for the city of Bloomington, who, as we've said, this is a money issue, and we're looking for other ways of collecting revenue through paid parking. We've spent a lot of money on these three parking garages, which we are now losing money all the time. Jason, you mentioned, why don't we just lower the rates there? I think they're losing so much money at this point that we would still just be losing money on those garages. The request for proposals has gone out. In fact, the proposals were due February 27th for companies who want us to choose their system for the metered parking. So that should be in it, and the department should have been able to look over some of those at this point. But Susie Johnson told us $1.4 to $1.5 million for the city to implement the system before they've even started getting our dollar an hour, for paying to be downtown. That's how much in the hole the city will be on top of their parking garages, which are losing money as well. If there is, what safeguards are there so that the city doesn't end up going broke over this? If so many people decide not to come down and give that dollar an hour, how will those costs be recouped? Is this a second series of parking garages where the city will implement something downtown and then be in debt?
Well, I think they're thinking they are going to recoup their capital outlay. I've been told in about a year with the dollar per hour and from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Once that gets instituted, they'll be able to make that back fairly quickly.
Assuming people choose to pay that dollar.
And I think they're banking on the fact, and I've said this before, people will. I've been told, I'll have to double check this, I hope I'm saying this correctly, those meters that went in along Morton Street in front of Bubs, that brings in, that alone, that small area brings in $40,000 a year. And people are using them. I don't, but
I think it's clear there'll be people downtown and they'll be using these, because there'll be a lot of people who live downtown, and that by definition they'll be there. My concern is who's left out, who's choosing to not come downtown at all. Are these people there my customers? Are they potentially even my customers? I'm not concerned that downtown's going to become like a ghost town or something. I mean, I think there's going to be more and more people downtown. It's just who are they? I know who I have now. I don't know who these people are.
And not just the people, like we've said, that frequent downtown as buyers. Obviously, there needs to be employees at every single one of these stores. Mm-hmm. And even if it does become a restaurant, bar, district, those are some of the lowest paid employees. Minimum wage is typical for a server in Bloomington, including downtown Bloomington. There are proposals perhaps for nonprofit employees such as myself and other employees of downtown businesses to get maybe a credit and have a half price in a garage. So they're still not taking up space on the street. They'll go to the garages and pay less than they would have had they not been employed downtown. So that's 50 cents an hour instead of a dollar an hour. Though I don't see many people, or I guess I wonder, do you see if someone is only planning on being downtown for half an hour, so they could either pay 50 cents and stay on the street or pay 50 cents and go to the garage, will that send people to a garage?
Yeah, there are going to be behaviors changing across the board. And at this point, Jason's right. Where will we see the fall off? The people that this will break the bank, it's too expensive, can't do it anymore, or it's just not convenient anymore, I'm going to shop elsewhere, or I'm going to order on Amazon.
Well, the other thing, too, is I think some of our elderly citizens will not want, they won't physically be able to walk from a parking garage to where they need to go. They just won't be able to. I think also was something that we may not be considering is I'm concerned that there'll be this a growing sense of cynicism and resentment, and that does take its toll. When people have this general mumbling, it does take its toll on the whole way the people yeah. treat each other.
It is a
revenue issue that we've heard. It's also a revenue issue for businesses and the nonprofits. All the churches that I'm aware of in downtown Bloomington do receive our maintenance. Our maintenance is very high, as you might guess, and we do receive donations and contributions from some of our groups. Some of our groups who have a little bit. It's not a lot, but it's enough to help pay some of our heating bills and all that kind of thing. And if these groups who do pay us a little bit choose to go someplace else to receive what they need, it will affect the bottom dollar, not only for the congregations and the churches as well. I mean, the businesses too. Mm-hmm. We've heard how it might mm-hmm. affect the businesses too. So it's revenue for loss for the city, but it's also potentially if you do it, it's potential revenue lost for a lot of other folks too.
Well, when I asked my some of my constituents in the Circles program through South Central Community Action Program, mm-hmm. many of them were kind enough to respond, and they brought up some things I hadn't even thought of. The CASA program that relies on volunteers to be the advocates for children in court proceedings and CHINS cases, and now they're going to have to pay for the privilege of being very dedicated long-term volunteers. The BPP often brings in other groups. There's a group that does a Spanish language theater group, and many of those are students and people who don't have the ability to park there for not just an hour, but during a rehearsal. If you've ever been in a rehearsal for anything, those things can go on forever. I mean, my sister works for Cardinal Stage Company, and I know how hard they work loading in, loading out, dealing with all the props, the sets. They're in the downtown for several hours launching a production and striking it afterwards.
This very radio station. I mean, it's volunteer run.
At the end, seniors, people with disabilities, people actually mentioning the restaurants, and they say very, very humbly, I don't eat out all that often. But when I do, I like every once in a while to go to, and I'm not going to name them, this one or that one. Now I'll have to think twice, and probably not. I'll probably change my behaviors there.
Right. Unfortunately, we're right at the end of the show here, so let's reiterate to our listeners that we are speaking about the proposal to implement downtown metered parking that will be voted on at the next city council meeting. They're on spring break this week, and so that council meeting will be at 7:30 on the 20th. What opportunities are there to continue this discussion the one remaining week that we have until that vote?
You always have the opportunity to communicate with the administration, with council members. We've been receiving emails. I talk to people on the street. People pigeonhole me on the street. I have no lack of opportunity to interact with folks who want to interact with us. And I do appreciate this opportunity to talk on the radio today.
And this this downtown group that was established because of this, can you talk about that just in our last minute here?
Well, it's a sort of by definition a loose and independently minded, I guess. So it's there's a lot of discussions going on via email. It's a disorganized effort just sort of by the nature of it. Everyone is of their own mind, and so do we have a meeting coming up? I mean, I think everyone's just trying to get out everyone for the city council meeting and to have a showing there, a good show of support there.
And what's the title of the group?
Bloomington. What does it stand for?
I can't remember.
BCAP. I'm trying to remember what it stands for.
Right? Against parking meters.
It's a group that was
Bloomington Retailers.
Formed by the people at Caveat Emptor. Yeah.
So and I know the last.
It's not really a group. More, it's more of an email chain.
The last numbers that were given to us was 2,500 people signing that petition against.
Yeah, I think they have 3,000.
Over 3,000 now. Yeah.
So the conversation continues. We had a little bit of it tonight on Interchange. Joining me were Jason Nicky, owner of Landlocked Music, Reverend Helen Hempfling, the pastor of First Christian Church, Jim Bradley, the co-owner of O-Child, Susan Sandberg, City Council at Large. Our associate producer tonight is Lewis Malone, and I'm Allison Bektesh for Interchange. Thanks so much for listening.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.